My guest, Attorney Chris Kelly, Executive Vice President, Home Services of America, talking about August 17th, 2024. The world is changing in real estate across the country, and buyers, you can still walk into an open house, but there's you can't just call an agent or meet somebody and say, I want to look at some houses. You have to sign something. Is that correct?
That is correct. And so think of it as a listing agreement. I cannot start marketing your house for sale, Mark, until you and I have entered into a listing agreement. And after August 17th, I could not show you properties and start helping you buy a home until we had entered into a written buyer agreement as well. As of now, as you kind of noted, you know, the customary practice may be that I show you some homes, we work together for a period of time, and then eventually, in a lot of states, buyer representation agreements have been very common, and they typically get entered into after you've established a little bit of a rapport and you're going to work together with one another.
Right, right, because if a buyer doesn't know you from Adam, and you know, you take a risk as a buyer's agent, you spend some time, you show them property, and then you maybe go around and say, hey, look, you know, you got to sign this form. But a buyer doesn't know me from Adam, and he wants to look at a house. I go, okay, great, you got to sign this. Now, what do they have to sign?
Yeah, so every state will look a little different based on some of their local agency laws, but it'll be a written buyer agreement that basically outlines the conditions on which how an agent gets paid, what their fiduciary duties are to the buyer, what the responsibilities of the buyer are to the agent. You know, oftentimes, once you sign that agreement as a buyer, you are agreeing that if you buy a house, even without the assistance of that agent, they would still be owed a commission. You know, you are using that agent as your exclusive person. I would expect to see in this kind of new environment we're going into that some of these agreements will have the opportunity to be, let's say, shorter in duration. So if they don't know you from Adam, like you mentioned, maybe you only sign it for a week or two. And then if there's a comfort level that's built and you want to continue to work together, you can extend it out for a longer period of time.
And if I'm correct, it could be for one property.
It could be limited to one property as well. That's exactly right. So duration, the territory geographically, there's a lot of ways that it could be narrowed down going forward. But as you noted, there does happen to be an agreement before you essentially cross the threshold of a home that you're assisting the buyer with.
Now, what if a buyer can say, oh, this is great, I like you, I'd like you to help me, but you know what? I barely have enough money for the down payment. I'm scraping it together. I can't we get the seller to pay you a commission? I don't have the money.
And yes, and they can. So the only thing that's precluded in the settlement agreement is as a buyer's agent or a buyer broker, you cannot filter out listings based on compensation, meaning I can't withhold listings from my buyer based on the amount of compensation that is or is not being offered. However, I can sort those listings. So I can say, buyer, buyer says, I really want to work with you, Mark. It's important that I have representation, but I scraped. This is all I have for the down payment. I cannot afford your commission. Well, knowing that, as you look at properties, you can call the agent. You can see what they have listed on their website, and you can look at properties where a compensation is being offered so that, you know, the buyer doesn't find themselves being surprised where they would owe you a commission at the closing table and they weren't aware of that.
Right. And the buyer is, if he doesn't have the money, he wants to buy a house and there's a seller. And personally, I think in my local area, I can't imagine sellers suddenly, because of a settlement, saying, you know what, I'm not going to offer any money to the buyer's agent. Because I think sellers in California have been quite used to transparency. And I think a lot of states, I think this initial lawsuit wouldn't have flown in California because we've already had such transparency. And I can't imagine sellers saying, you know what? No, I'm not going to offer any commission to someone, even though a listing agent is going to explain to them how it works. And, you know, it's still a seller's market, but it's, you know, shifting a little bit more inventory. But a seller could theoretically say, you know what? I'm not going to pay a commission. The buyer can't afford to pay a commission. How is that buyer going to buy that house?
Yeah, I mean, in that situation, there's nothing in the settlement that says buyer's agents must work for free. And so the buyer would have to elect to be unrepresented in that situation. If they said, this is the house, we love this house, this is the house we have to have, seller's adamant, they will not offer any type of commission or concession to cover the cost of buyer representation, then the buyer would have to elect to basically go it alone on that property. Now, I'm with you. I don't see it happening with a great deal of frequency because, remember, about 80% of all sellers are also buyers. So I'm a seller saying, yeah, I want to save a few bucks here and not offer a commission potentially to a buyer's agent. But on the converse side, when I become a buyer, what if the seller does that to me as well? As you know, as a professional, the transactions when there are representatives on both sides for both parties are the transactions that typically go the smoothest when you have professional representation on both sides. So beyond the monetary aspects from it, it's typically better for the seller when the buyer is professionally represented in a transaction.
And if you have two buyers and one is quite wealthy and is paying that agent a buyer's commission and the other buyer who doesn't have the money to pay and the seller is looking at two offers, I mean, who is he going to pick? I mean, he's going to want to work with a buyer's agent who has representation.
Correct. And we saw very similar to what we saw during COVID, right? When there was multiple offer situations and one buyer was willing to waive inspections and waive appraisal contingencies and they were cash, right? Those types of offers stood out. Or versus if I was a VA buyer or an FHA buyer that had all these requirements of the seller as part of buying the home, the seller's like, oh, I don't want to mess with that. And so you could see similar things arise there where the competition between two buyers for a property comes down to what they're asking the seller for.
Right. And so when you go back to why this lawsuit was brought and what did the DOJ want to accomplish by doing this? Well, what do they think that, why do they think it's such a great thing? What do they think is going to happen?
Well, the lawsuit itself was brought privately by a group of plaintiffs. The DOJ has just kind of tangentially had an interest in NAR business practices. But the theory of the plaintiffs is that there was the NAR and the brokerages and agents were forcing sellers to make offers of compensation to buyers, which cost the sellers money. That this was money that came out of the seller's pocket that they otherwise would not have had to pay. That was the theory of the lawsuit.
So I am just fascinated by this whole process. Everyone has been doing business a certain way for a long time, and I will be amazed if this is a positive, if there's a real positive outcome, and the people who brought this lawsuit sit back 6 months or a year from now and say, see what we did? We did such a good thing. I have a feeling that a lot of buyers are going to be behind the eight ball. That's just my armchair guess. And my guest today, attorney Chris Kelly, Executive Vice President, Home Services of America, is tapped into this because they operate 51 brokerages across the country. Chris, always great to talk to you. Always learned a lot. Thanks for joining me.
Mark, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, let's keep in touch. Maybe we'll talk again in November when the court, see what the court
Sounds
does.
Good.
Okay, thanks.
Let's plan on it. Sounds great. Thank
thanks.
You, sir.
Okay, bye-bye. The rest of you, please stay tuned for the weekly Multiple Listing Sales Update.